afternoon. Today is Friday, August the 9th, 220th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Humboldt Bay Fire Chief Ken Woods.
Good afternoon.
See, it's almost sounding normal now, isn't it?
Normal?
Fluid. How's,
oh, that's
fluid.
Better.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
much
almost,
better.
That's almost a fire thing, huh?
Fluid? It is.
Yeah, okay. This afternoon we'll spend a little bit of time talking about wildland fire. What a shocker.
Could be appropriate.
Yeah, it could be appropriate. Gee, you've been reading the news. North of us as well as south of us. We'll also spend a little bit of time talking about the new fire truck. Ken made a presentation that I happened to be part of. No, I wasn't part of the presentation. I was in the audience.
Just an observer.
I was in the cheap seats. It's kind of what it boils down to. Yeah,
casual observer.
Very casual. Yes. And little on the observation part. But we'll talk about the fire truck and some of the things that it can do and the special designs and stuff if you haven't had a chance to see that. And we got what? Well, you don't deal with the murder part, but you deal with the mayhem and the medical stuff. So we can talk about some of those goofy things going on too.
Right. Always.
Yeah. He said with a fatigued, wry, near smile. So we got lots to talk about. We'll start when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, news and information time. Boy, I've tried to spell encampments three different times now, and it keeps coming out Epperson.
What?
Encampments. I'm flashing back to when Macaulay and I used to do CR football games, play-by-play.
Okay.
Here's a kid from Del Norte, Eric Epperson. And I just...
Oh, got it.
It's 3:14. Yeah, it's a Friday, can you tell? Yeah. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods, but before we do our quote, let's see if we can find a good one here to... Ah, here we go. And apropos to our discussion during the break.
Okay, let's see.
It's a little philosophical. Howard Ruff, quote, "It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark."
Yes, huh? That's true.
Yeah. We were talking about drug culture, but
right.
The same.
Right. Yeah.
The metaphor.
Is the same.
Boy, is that a fancy word for today.
That's big.
Three syllables and said without stutter. That's...
Don't try good. To spell it.
Yeah, good day, man. Yeah. Is that three F's or four? Oh, my. All the stuff that's going on in Siskiyou County, was it Douglas County?
Mm-hmm.
You got down south.
Right, all over.
All the stuff. And I think it's really kind of a weird situation. If you follow the national news, you're hearing flooding in the Midwest and the Northeast and too much rain and too much rain. And here we are, arid and
exact opposite.
Dealing. Yeah, it's that separation is just kind of tough to wrap around. But we're going to be, I think, having opportunities to wrap our head around this thing for a couple of months.
Huh? Yeah, this is going to go on for a while, I think. And, you know, it's they're not far from us in the eastern end of the county. And they're having some real problems with those fires there. And then the recent one this week that just broke out in Riverside County, the Silver Fire, is really going crazy down there. And they've got a lot of problems trying to contend with that one, primarily, again, not only dry conditions, but the wind as well.
That's, I guess, one thing that we don't have is the wind. But I think we make the lovely substitution of thunderstorms.
Yeah. In fact, I think right now they're on the way. They're talking about them coming this way. And the state is on a higher alert up in our area because of those.
When that scenario starts to develop, do you anticipate your guys are going to get called over and kind of hedge a little bit, or is there anything you can do, or do they even talk to municipal or or whatever you are these days.
Yeah,
districts.
We're municipal still.
Is that okay? Well, you know, with a blend, I don't know if you're...
No, we're still municipal. Well, local government is the official term they call us versus state government. But, yeah, we receive briefings every morning from the state on what's going on in the different fires out there, what they've done overnight, what the weather conditions are predicted to be in the different areas of the state. And, yeah, we're always ready to go, but when there is a little bit more heightened awareness that there's a fire close by, that resources are getting drawn down at the state level, then our guys will gear up a little more to another higher level. You know, they'll check it twice instead of checking it once, their gear, make sure they've got everything, make sure we're staffing the correct apparatus so that we can get them out the door as quickly as possible. And then it's a wait-and-see game.
So if you get a call, is it... like responding to an alarm, everybody bust chops and you're out and you're on the road in 2 minutes, or is it a little less frantic?
It's a little less frantic because usually the distance you're traveling are much greater. So, you know, you're not, as in the case of a medical call, trying to get there within a short number of minutes to save a life that way. But it is a little bit longer process where the crews are grabbing their out-of-county bag, which includes their gear for overnight, extra changes of clothes, you know, those types of additional needs they'll have, and they throw those on the rig and they're ready to go within, again, it's, you know, could be 5-10 minutes. We may grab extra wildland hose that we don't always carry with us in town. It's those types of things.
Oh, I think if an adrenaline rush lasted the 6 hours to get there, you'd have a bunch of really empty body shells to deal with.
Yeah, well, it's interesting having gone to a number of fires in Southern California as you crest over the grapevine and come down the hill and you see fire in different locations around you. And, you know, you still have hours of driving time sometimes to get to them. And you're excited, and the adrenaline is rushing, and, you know, it's hurry up, let's get there. And this can go on for a while till you can actually get to the fire scene.
I know you're not a paid professional forester.
Not yet.
Because you don't have that title on your chest. But how much are the fires in Oregon and just east of us being exacerbated because we're not getting in there and cutting the forest the way that, you know, I think... was it 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it was 300 million board feet.
Yeah.
Now it's around 50 million. I mean, it just, the load, I would think, has just got to be frightening for firemen.
Right. The management of, you know, fire that was done years ago, as well as the timber work and thinning out of trees, those types of things, has a big effect. And, you know, it does exasperate the situation. And these areas that are, you know, unhit with fire for years, it creates big ones.
KINS News and Information Times 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Mark the dates August 14th through the 25th for the 117th annual Humboldt County Fair in Ferndale. Beginning opening day, there'll be 8 days of fast horse racing. Competing beef and dairy cattle, goats, poultry, sheep, and swine will be on display and judged. The flower pavilion will be filled with beautiful plants grown by county gardeners. The Art Pavilion will have many delights for the eye, and enjoy the judged exhibits of locally made items, from baked goods to hand-spun yarn, with much in between such as decorated potatoes, scarecrows, quilts, rugs, and home brews. There'll be plenty to eat and drink, so you can treat yourself to corn dogs and cotton candy. The Commercial Exhibits Building will feature fascinating products, and of course there's the Ferris Wheel and other rides the kids will want to try. For hours and information, call 786-9511. That's 786-9511. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people, places, and things that makes us a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time is 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, some of the challenges certainly with the wildland fires and the diversion of attentions into those other areas are there. But I would imagine you got enough going on here locally to keep the focus going on the home front.
It is. Yeah, there's no shortage of things to do locally with the varied responses that we have just in our local community, whether it's the city or outside the city limits in the greater Eureka area. You know, the types of calls we have every day, whether it's a medical call, Your standard heart attack, seizures, regular type.
Standard call. Heart attack?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gee, thanks, man.
You know, we had a situation the other day at Taco Bell where a truck was going through the drive-through and spilled a road sealant, which got on the surface of the road, then into the storm drain. So you have a hazardous material situation. You need to try to mitigate that from going further in the storm drain. You've got to figure out how you're going to clean it up. You've got to make notifications to the Fish and Game, to Coast Guard. You have a lot of bureaucratic type boxes you need to check.
That triggers for you guys. You have to do that.
Yeah,
absolutely. As a responder.
Exactly. When anything gets in the storm drain, it's going into the bay. Fish and Game wants to know about it. Coast Guard wants to know about it. We have to make those notifications. We contact the State Office of Emergency Services Warning Center, and then we're trying to mitigate the problem. So we're out there spreading, you know, whatever the material may be. In this case, it was essentially a kitty litter that we're trying to soak up
into the water or down into the drain?
Not so much into the drain. What we'll do is put a barrier or a dike in front of the drain and keep any more material from going in. It's awful tough to stop anything once it's already gone down.
Does the, I know this isn't your department also, does the storm drain system go into the water treatment facility and then into the bay, or does it go directly into the bay? Because I would think if it was going through water treatment, you know, Fish and Game and those guys, they're not dealing with it. It's the guys at the the water house that have to play with it.
You know, again, that's not my department, so I'm not sure specifically what pipe goes where for that. But, you know, most cases it does drain into the bay. And so it's out there and gone. And we've got to try to stop it as quickly as we can. But just, you know, those varied type of calls that we have. And then the fires, the vegetation fires, structure fires, vehicle accidents, a wide range of things that are going on a constant basis.
Now, you mentioned vegetation fires a couple of different times. Are these, they're not lightning strike?
No.
Because we would be familiar with the event
that,
causing
right?
that
probably,
one. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Is this people being stupid? Is this stupid people being stupid?
It's primarily we're running into the homeless encampments where, you know, people are cooking in makeshift type facilities, whether it's, you know, outdoor type stoves or just open pit fires and things like that. And they have strung tarps and there's a lot of debris, and fire will get away from them. And then we're called in to a vegetation fire, but includes a lot of other things. For instance, last week we had two fires where, again, vegetation was what came in as a and then we get there and we have exploding propane cylinders.
That's
got to
make it
cases.
Exciting for you, huh?
Yeah, it's, as one of my battalion chiefs said, a little bit of a pucker factor when you get there and all of a sudden there's a series of explosions and, you know, we've got to back off pretty quick for our safety. We've got to make sure nobody's in the encampment. We want to make sure everybody is out of there safe and sound. But it's a very huge concern for us, for our firefighter safety, because those cylinders go anywhere.
You often talk about going into a house to save a life, mm-hmm. you know, risk lock to
right.
save a lot. Okay.
Exactly.
In that scenario where mm-hmm. there's vegetation, you've got a couple of potential bombs
right.
in there. You don't know who, how many, age, condition, da-da-da. Do you go right. into that scenario, or do you just kind of hold back and say, you know, we don't know, and we don't know if they might be hiding, if they're, you know, off on their meds?
Right. You know, it really varies on the situation. If we've got, a fire burning, we're going to go in and immediately try to put it out. If we see, propane cylinders that are in the fire that are particularly starting to pop off, we get explosions, then we're going to slow down and take a step back. But our job is to save life, and we are going to, you know, make every effort to get in there as quickly as we can and look for people, look for any victims, make sure that everybody's out of there, and, you know, then control the vegetation from there.
In that order, I'm presuming?
Correct. Yeah.
How critical is it to save the vegetation?
Not as critical, particularly here where a lot of these encampments are along the water, you know, so it's wetter. It's not traveling at a rapid rate of spread where it is east of us, of course, right now in the hills, and where it's hot and dry, it's not here. So here we're, again, looking for the life hazard, how we can, you know, prevent any further problems that way, and then we're going to deal with the vegetation as kind of the secondary thought.
Kind of protect it from spreading, but let it burn where it's where it is.
Right, right. And again, a lot of times it's a lot of other materials that are burning in those types
That's
of
fires. That's right. With the different material, it could be smoldering or at least have in the air. You may not want to get too close to some of this
stuff. Yeah, you don't. You don't. When we're in a structure fire, you know, our firefighters are wearing their air packs. But on wildland fires, vegetations, they're just breathing the water.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
Choosing new furniture for your home can be a challenge. Will the colors match? Will the fabrics go well? Will it be comfortable? And will it last? Solve these questions with a visit to Vern's Furniture. Vern's Furniture Consultants have the knowledge to put the right room together for you, whether it's the living room, bedroom, dining room, or laundry room. Vern's has what you're looking for. Free delivery and so much more. Vern's Furniture in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods, Fire Chief of Humble Bay Fire. Ken, historically, probably, it must have been before you were here, it was no big deal to hear about meth labs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the bathtubs, there'd be a spill here, a spill there. We'd find a $250,000 environmental cleanup in this area, and that, right. You know, dumping in the creek and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Don't seem to hear an awful lot about that anymore, other than references to meth being a drug that's imported into our area, either through some of the criminal syndicates that are bringing it in and bartering for the marijuana.
Yeah.
One goes out, it stays here, then it hits our streets, and you guys get to pick up the pieces.
Right.
But you guys had an opportunity to respond to a situation that was a meth lab that blew up. Do the guys still have the expertise in being able to handle a meth lab that's blown up?
Yeah, they absolutely do. We train on those types of things, our hazardous material crews that deal with different types, again, of hazards out there. We get regular bulletins on kind of the latest flavor of whether it's drug labs, whether it's terrorist type devices that they're using. We do receive updates on those, and we're aware of those. Particularly the lab situation has gone from more indoor to mobile, where you're seeing them in cars and people are transporting.
A lab in a car?
Yeah, where mobile meth labs, and they're doing it in smaller quantities, and then they discard the material along the road. Again, the types of varied potential problems. We are constantly being updated on those from whether it's the state, whether it's, you know, the federal government, and we're passing that information down as quickly as we can to our guys and ingraining in them that, you know, these are things that will kill them as well if we're not careful, and we need to approach things with caution and be very careful, particularly when we see a situation that's unfamiliar and new to us.
I'm still trying to grasp a mobile meth lab. It's not like in the back of a station wagon or something, is it?
It definitely can be, yeah. And it's the bottles and the containers and the, you know, more so the residue of what they've been cooking, and they're moving from place to place, and they've got all this material in their vehicles, and so you have a hazardous situation traveling down the road. A lot of times, you know, things are getting thrown out of the vehicles or fall out of the vehicles, and somebody walking down the street finds them, and here you have a bottle of an unknown substance, and the bottle is all contorted and under pressure, and people are, you know, don't know what to do with them. Sometimes they just call us. Sometimes they pick them up, which is the worst thing they can do. And our guys go out, and it's pretty much cold turkey to try to determine, you know, what it is. Is it a hazard? What the material is? And then to mitigate it.
So if there's a funny bottle,
yeah,
don't touch?
Yeah, you don't want to be picking up things like that, sealed bottles that look like they're under pressure, particularly, that have, you know, colored substances in there that don't look like they should be in there. Yeah, those kind of things are a real hazard to people.
Huh. Yeah, I was just thinking, with everybody trying to clean up, or many trying to clean up, like, yeah, in front of their house, you know, there's a funny bottle in,
right,
the gutter. You don't think, you pick it up, you throw it in the garbage,
right,
can.
Right. Yeah, particularly, you know, these are bottles that are still sealed. And again, a lot of times they're under pressure. So you'll see, you know, different shapes and things to them. You can tell they're under pressure. And they've got, it doesn't look like what the fluid should be inside of them. It's something different. And those
significantly different looking than like a
it's not Coke, it's not Pepsi,
it's not those, a soda, yeah, ish,
right,
kind of a thing,
right? So, and people need to be careful with those because they're out there.
Glass bottles, plastic bottles, do they tend to run either?
Both. You'll see both, yeah. Huh.
So what color are these things typically?
Well, it can be, you know, they can use any different forms of bottles out there, but you know, the substance, the fluid inside can be a, you know, dirty looking, muddy type. It can be a whole range of different things depending on the products that have been mixed within there.
So it really looks different.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. That's got to be weird. Trying to find one of these things. I know you're not in the law enforcement, you're picking up the pieces afterward, but if you see a trail of stuff, or signs that something was there,
right, exactly, then it raises a lot of red flags, and we need to have the extra caution, you know, when we go into those types of situations, that we're not just rushing right in there. We're taking the time to understand what potential problems could come out of it.
Everybody on the crew is trained to this one, or is this your hazmat team?
Everybody is trained to a basic awareness level. Then our hazmat team members are trained at a much higher level, and they're, you know, really focusing and specialized in dealing with a wide range of hazardous materials. And again, how to identify, how to contain, how to isolate an area, and then how to mitigate the problem.
KINS News and Information Times 341. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:44. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, you got your new play toy now, what, 3 months, six months?
It's about 6 months, yeah.
Okay. You finally broke down and allowed me to touch it.
I did. Right. You still have the grin on your face.
Yeah. It is an interesting thing, I think, for a lot of folks who aren't in fire service, to see something like that, because it really, the level of the sophistication of the engineering associated with it, not the fire stuff, but all the other stuff. You go, this is like a driving office, or things along those lines. Yeah. It's much different than I think what most people envision is, oh, there goes a fire truck.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's all those different components where you're talking about the electronics and the computers, and then you couple those with the mechanical aspects of the ladder and the pump and the equipment we use to do the daily business. But there's just so many different facets of, for instance, what that vehicle carries and its capabilities and what it can do. With the latest technology, and you know, you put that in place then with just the safety features of your vehicle and multiply it out to a vehicle of that size, it's huge.
How many computers do you have, or computer systems do you have on that? Any idea?
I don't know. There's a, you know, we get, it looks like a 747 in the cockpit when the lights and bells start going off on that thing. And there's, you know, there's a colored button and light for every little thing that is functioning or may have a problem or that we operate, actuate. So computer-wise, I don't know, but it's overwhelming.
The truck is overwhelming out in the parking lot. This thing is a little bit more expansive than overwhelming. You haven't had an open house since you had it.
Right.
But you have had it on the speakers tour.
We have.
What, for the uninitiated, what do we say? What are the comments about this vehicle?
Of course, the number one is, it's so big. I didn't realize it was that big. And probably the second one is, when people see it driving around town, they comment, I didn't think it was going to make that turn. I didn't think it was going to get in that space. And that's the most impressive part, is where it can go. And people are absolutely shocked that that thing will go where our much smaller engines, you know, have a tough time going, but it just whips in and out of there very easily. And then when they see it up close, not only the height of the ladder, you know, the 100 feet that it will extend to, but the storage capacity and the amount of varied equipment that we're able to carry on it is really a shock to them. And again, people think of, you know, you're just going to a fire, you're just going to a medical, and not all the other things that you carry and do and you need to have with you when you show up at a call, not knowing necessarily what you're getting yourself into.
Now that you guys have been able to play with it for a while,
mm-hmm.
what's the coolest thing for you?
I think the coolest thing for me is, you know, we researched this vehicle for over a year, and we've never had one here in the city of that type, with the tiller, with the two drivers. And the coolest thing for me is really seeing the guys see the research come to fruition, see the vehicle happen, see the advantages now, and really embrace a new way of doing business and be more efficient at it. They're very excited about the capabilities and what they can do, how quickly the ladder can be set up, how quickly they can get to the roof of a building, how much extra equipment they can carry, so we don't have to have two apparatus respond. We only have one. So they're excited about it. They continue to find new facets and new ways of doing business on it, and that's very exciting.
That's why I was wondering if they were kind of pushing it a little bit in testing this or testing that. Roof inspections. I mean, you don't, you can't do that from inside the building when you guys are doing your fire extinguisher.
Right.
But, you know, you lift that guy up, at least you get a visual.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity to get out and learn, you know, again, the building construction out there. It's been a great learning tool. They're out more in the community. They're seeing what's out there. They're looking at the different types of construction. What's the best way to get to the roof? Where's the best place to park the apparatus? What's going to be in the way? You know, what side of the building do we need to get on? All those things. So it's really an exciting learning process for them.
A little bit more detail than just having the floor plans or the general basic understanding?
Right. You know, to be able to see it and feel it is really exciting and beneficial.
Well, hopefully they don't develop too much expertise on it.
I'll tell them.
A little too much use out in the field,
right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah,
hopefully not,
You knew where I was headed with that one. Good. Thanks for not busting me on it.
Next time.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love and see you tomorrow morning.